And first item on the agenda is public comment for any items that are not on the agenda. Any items not on the agenda for public comment? Okay, we have review of agenda.
Ben Johnson is here as an assignment for his Boy Scouts.
Oh, okay.
At the public meeting. His mom is with him. Her name is Eva.
Well, we're glad you're here, Ben. We hope you enjoy the production. It's good that they're getting you interested in public stuff. So, as far as review of agenda, any items that you would like to add or delete, anyone?
I've got two additions. One is just to formally adopt the changes to our meeting rule procedures to incorporate the change in hours. So that's not in our current policy, so we should just adopt. John actually made the changes a while ago. We never adopted them.
We did adopt them at the 3:20 meeting, and it's in the meeting stating as such.
So they were never. It was never published?
It may not have been posted, but it was adopted at the 3:20 meeting.
There's a copy for everybody to sign.
So it hasn't been. Do we know whether it's been signed?
I don't know.
Okay.
No,
well,
I don't think we signed that.
So we should. All right, well, then we just need to get it signed. And then I have another addition of whether the board should keep the Capital Planning Committee alive or decommission it. It's still active.
We also need to add two liquor permits for American Crafted Spirits. And we can do those down at the end.
Is that Silo?
Yes. And if you could find the agenda that I wrote on, there was one other item. I can't seem to find that agenda.
Errors?
Yes. Neil, what was this additional copy of the errors and omissions that the lister signed in this packet? I thought we approved that 2 weeks ago.
You did.
And signed it.
You did.
Do we need to discuss why I have another one in my packet from the central office? I guess we better add that.
Whose name?
I can find it. I don't know.
It's the same name as what we had before. Rand over in Barnard. Yeah. I thought we took care of that and signed the copy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another copy in here in these disbursements. So I can't answer that question because I don't know why it's there.
For your records?
Well, it's not signed by the select board. So
mm-hmm.
Let's just put it on, and if we don't have to do anything about it, perhaps we can figure it out. And Neil suggested that if we worked on the budget earlier in the session, he would then take those figures and go into the office and plug them in so we could see what those numbers did to the bottom line. And so if we have to move that up, I don't know whether we need to vote on that or not, if we just change its location. Any thoughts on that? So if we were to put, for instance, the highway budget perhaps up underneath Alan Graham. Rather than down below. And the Palmer pole, we took care of that at the last meeting. And Jimmy, is Sunapee paving happy now? So we don't need to discuss that extra. So we can take the Sunapee paving item off as well. I would move that with those changes that we adopt this agenda.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? All of those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Approval of the minutes. Need a motion for that. Anybody?
He moved.
Anybody second?
Second.
Do you have any questions on the minutes? Anyone? Any corrections? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then we've approved the minutes. We have warrants for approval. We have accounts payable on number 19057 for $25,296.25. And payroll 19056 for $7,015.54. And another accounts payable 19054 for $7,075.00. And another 19051 accounts payable for $201,299. That's the paving money. The $7,000 was the slate roof, which got finished. Does anybody want to look at these before I move that we pay these? Anybody want to look at them? All those in favor of paying those various bills, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Then please sign them and we'll move on. Business items for discussion or possible vote, road foreman report.
Okay. Well, as you know, we've been doing road maintenance for the winter. Things have been awesome and rigs up and stuff like that. I haven't had a chance to do a whole bunch more than just take out roads. So that's kind of where that's at. I did do an annual review on Justin. It's in his file and sometime long it should be reviewed. And
would you like to schedule a short executive session before the next meeting to discuss that with the board? If you'd like at 5:30?
Yep.
Would that work for you?
Yep. Yep.
Would that be all right with the board?
Yep.
Okay, we'll do that. Yeah.
And then the other thing that I've got is I know you guys approved the hydrous heater, but I haven't been able to get it because of the shipping on it was going to be $1,099, not a chip. But still, we have to meet our end of that grant, our match of that grant, and that's not even that, you know what I mean? So,
as I recall, the grant was for $6,000, so you still are, you'll still be fine. So it's going to cost, instead of $5,395, it'll cost about $6,100. The shipping is going to be $1,091. So I think we need to have a motion to approve Jimmy to buy this to satisfy that grant requirement.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Get it done.
And then the other thing that I did do is I called around, and I think because the rock salt that we may get, the straight salt, and I was curious, and so I called the same company, Cargo, to talk to them about clearing salt, and where they came up with the 850-ton. And the 850-ton was back when I was here, and I was using about 850-ton of that clearly. The town of Auburn's been averaging right around 1,000-ton of the street salt. That clearly saves you more. Sometimes it'll save you a small storm if it's on the road. And with Woodstock, I was watching Woodstock, and they use clearly. And times where I had put more salt out, they didn't have to. It bought them through the next store. So that being said, I figured it all up and everything, and the price that we're paying right now is $78 a ton. To buy Clearlane, it's $88 a ton. If you bought the 850-ton of the Clearlane, mind you, too, that you're not going to have the overtime and stuff into it, having to put that salt out, that expense, it would be $74,800. If you bought just 1,000-ton of straight salt, it's $78,000. So he gave me a contract, and said, if you guys want to go that route, we're going to have to buy all the 850-ton. But he said that it's getting down to where if we're going to do it, we got to get it, move on with it because of the chemicals that they need to put into that to make it back.
That magnesium that's in the clear lane.
What's that?
What's in the clear lane for
an additive?
Is it magnesium? Or is it?
It's magnesium, yeah. There's something else. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
That's also more effective in a colder temperature, too.
It's very effective in a colder
temperature. Yeah, I mean, what I remember from the class I took last year, and you know, when it's.
What's that?
When it's 28 out, it doesn't give you much advantage, but it definitely works a lot better when it's cold, because magnesium will melt down to like 20 below, or salt, rock salt stops being fully effective at like 15. So,
yeah, this stuff here, I remember putting that clearly up at zero, it would activate it perfectly.
The magnesium is a lot more corrosive, however.
I haven't called Woodstock to talk to them on how much they were doing per lane or anything like that, and of course. I'm kind of slack with that. I don't really keep track of it. I'll just keep track of what goes out. And maybe I'm not putting enough of the salt out, but it seems like I'm putting enough of it out, and it's just not doing what it should be doing that I use. So, and you go down there, and theirs is all still sloppy and slushy and everything else, and ours has gone the other way, so I can step back down on the road. But that's up to you guys. We don't have to sign it. We can still use the straight salt. Still can stay with it. But if we ever want to try or ever want to get any clear lane, we've got to sign this.
Okay.
Is
there anything else?
Yeah.
I would think we'd go with the clear lane. I would think we would want to go with the clear lane. It's more effective.
I'd like you to at least try it.
Try it.
Yeah. Well, let's just say we signed that contract for the clear lane, and we felt that it wasn't giving us the advantage that we thought. We can still go back and get straight salt on the other contract, can't we?
Certainly may.
We're with Cargill now.
Yeah. So what have we got to lose?
Yeah. So we're not. You know, we're not going to another vendor and sort of negating our contract we have.
So we'll buy either one or the other.
I'm always willing to try something.
So I'll talk to you guys.
Well, do we have a motion?
Move that we contract with Cargill to purchase what we call Clear Lane salt.
Yes.
Clear Lane Enhanced Deficer. A second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Do I have, with that motion, the authority to sign this on my behalf?
On uniforms so that we can have some uniforms down there to Meridian. We don't have to keep coming in with the ratty looking clothes on. And so I called in three companies. I called Uniferous twice. They never called me back. And I called Keenan in Hampshire, I think it is. And then they called me back and said they don't supply the service. I'm coming in, picking them up and cleaning them. They just sell you the uniforms and then you're responsible for them after that. So then Cintas came in, a company named Cintas, and sat down with me and Justin. I was on vacation at that time, and we went down through and on stuff and whatnot. They're all, every brand, all the brand that they carry is Carhartt brand. So, and it ended up being $137.94 a week.
And you said that included shop
rags down there, like today, cleaning up stuff down there. We have blue towels and all that. You're not supposed to throw that stuff in the trash. So they would come in with their blue shop towels and put their little bin over there. You throw them in the bin. And then the week they come in, pick them up, and you go. And that price, I got two dressier shirts per person so that for training or anything of that nature, they'll be able to wear them. You'll be able to wear them. And then they're also the high visibility ones, so you don't have to wear vests or anything.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I'd like to see you guys get them, and if you're happy with it, whatever you look at it, the only requirement I'd like to see is that they all have the ANSI class 2 or 3 or whatever is required when you're out on the road. So that way, for the vests, are just a pain in the butt.
What's that?
The vests are just a pain in the butt. Having it built in.
And I'm guilty of it because sometimes, like, next thing I know, oh crap, I don't have my vests on. You know what I mean?
And having the laundering service is my thought is a good idea, given you're not bringing that shit home with all of your latest clothing if you're into oil and grease and everything else. So
one would hope the cleaning services would have much better product for getting rid of all that.
That's right. And it doesn't have to be
sure they do. Shall we keep this, and when we get to the budget, we'll discuss it?
Yes.
Anything else, Jim?
That's it.
Okay, then we're on to truck purchase. And that information was in Cindy's packet, the spreadsheet. I think you sent it after the packet, didn't you, Cindy?
No, it was in the packet. Do you want me to make copies of it to hand out right now?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Can I borrow that?
Emily, I've got a question for Jim.
Sure.
Or just Brian. Did you ever have any luck finding out about Cloudland road posting?
You know, I actually called. Who did I call to? I can't remember. That was.
Is that
what
that was?
There was a guy that I can't remember. It wasn't Chris Baltz, anyways. I can't remember his name. And he told me to call Chris Baltz. And I called Chris twice. I didn't email him, but I called him twice. And and he never called me back, so it kind of my bad. It's kind of slipped my mind.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just curious. It was on the agenda. I mean, it was on the minutes from last time, but I just didn't know if he'd gotten anything.
And he did. The guy that I was talking to said, I can't speak to President, but sure, there's stuff. He said, you're going to have to go in. He's going to tell you to go into this little orange book. They call it the orange book. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to go about a procedure on that and go to the state, talk to the state about it, get it legally done. So.
You also will have, regarding that Conlon culvert that needs to be replaced, Harrington sent this afternoon a proposal to give us a preliminary design to get us to getting a grant together. I also touched base, reached out to the Willis Engineering, which isn't Willis anymore, down in Passville, and I got no response from them. And so I don't think that structures grant is an immediate thing. I can try and get hold of Willis again and see if maybe they'll bring give us a proposal to do a preliminary design. But I didn't receive that from John until this noon, so you probably want to think about that and look at it. Part of that proposal was for the preliminary design, and then part of it was if we got a grant, or even if we wanted to get the construction phase under. So would you like me to try and get Willis again, whatever it's called now? I think it's whatever it is. I've got the paperwork at home.
Yeah, just so we have it.
I'll try and call him again. Is there anyone else you would suggest that might... let me try and get hold of him for the call again and see if I can get him. So, what do you guys want to do on these... prices. And Jim, did you have any thoughts whether you wanted a Fairfield body or a Viking body? Not fair.
No, no, no. Viking seems like it's going to be
perfect. Were we buying any plows with any of these?
Or
we,
the
wing plow. Estimates on what they would do if we bought two trucks.
I called them. I did send them an email because I had to talk to Clark's anyhow. And on the RFP for the 10-wheeler that we did, it was in there that we would potentially purchase two trucks. Yeah. There was no guarantee, but so these prices reflect that.
So in other words,
this is the deal.
This is the bottom line.
Whether we buy one or two. And did we ever decide whether or not to go with a standard or an automatic?
After talking with Jimmy, you guys prefer the standard transmission.
Justin has the automatic, but you know, I don't think it bothers
us. Well, I guess the question I have is that we did have an employee. I mean, because we never know what we're going to have for employees. We had an employee that couldn't drive a standard. It was a good employee, just couldn't drive a standard. And so I'm just curious, thinking ahead, whether or not we should get an automatic so it's more universal for whoever we might hire in the future, because remember, we're buying these things for 7 years, and you know, we don't know where we're going to be in 7 years. Certainly, you know, a few guys probably will have moved on and stuff, so.
Well,
I know one discussion was is that you preferred the standard if you're going to put a scraper blade under one of them because you get a lower gear, but I'm not sure if we're putting the scraper blade. Certainly won't put them on the six-wheeler if you're planning on putting it on. It was talked about putting it on the 10-wheeler.
That's in this price. The 10-wheeler price has the scraper blade in it.
Both of them? All of them do? Okay. So then it's just a matter of what, you know, your discretion, whether you think the standard would be better for scraper truck or not. I don't know. I'm not...
I thought the discussion partly was that Jimmy was worried about with an automatic that you didn't have much purchase going backwards down the hill. And or going frontwards for that matter, because once it was in gear, or if it was out of gear, you were freewheeling, and if it was in gear and it was icy, it was going to push it. Now, I don't know. That's...
Well, I know reverse, and all the manufacturers said this to me, in reverse, there's no way to break it all to them. None. So you're relying on your brakes every way you go in reverse. So if you're backing down a steep hill, anything like that. And Justin said this one here, don't even do it. You have to rely on the brakes.
So if you get in a hill,
automatic versus standard?
Automatic versus standard with the automatic. If you get in that hill and you don't make it and you want to back up, you're totally under your brakes with the automatic.
And with standard, you're not.
With a standard, you can put it in reverse, and your gate brake will help you.
But, and to me, I talk around, everybody loves their automatics, yeah, but that is something that people have bought recently that didn't really quite understand that you're not liking them at all. I mean, when you're fully loaded, you don't make a hill and you're going to back down that hill, you're relying on everything you've got on the brakes. And then they're not going to be four-wheel drive, so you're not going to have high and low. So you're not going to be able to reach over there and put it in higher range of water, which is what it is now, without buying that big truck to put it in that huge comic thing. They don't recommend leaving them in four-wheel drive, high or low, going down the hill, because that's what's popping the front ends out of them.
How come do the other vendors just not offer standard in either, with the exception of Clark? So Clark offered, were the only ones to offer the standard, right? Am I reading that right?
I don't know if you get a price for a standard from the other two. I mean, likely it's going to be the same reduction. They were all the same exact transmissions, but...
Right. It was the same...
The first truck was spec'd as an automatic, which is why we got automatic prices.
Correct.
And then we asked for the standard pricing after. And the six-wheeler was spec'd as a standard, which is why we did no automatic pricing for it.
Correct.
Do I recall that you said this automatic was going to add about $8,000 or deduct about $8,000?
The standard transmission is $8,866, yep. Cheaper.
Less. So no matter what you put it on?
Correct.
Okay.
But did I hear you right? Any of the vendors can do a standard? It's just that we didn't... Okay.
And because the transmissions, I believe, on all of the trucks are identical, it would be
the same.
Right.
Okay.
Do those warranties include tolling?
No.
Clark's does.
Yeah, I think it's a separate item, though. It's like $1,600 extra, right. I think.
I
misspoke on that, the one from Clark's. The Clark's warranty is what it is. The towing is the same, but it's not in that. This is just the warranty.
Is that the towing is not in that Clark's?
Correct. Correct. When you asked me, I misspoke.
Okay. So none of these warranties.
It's 16.
It goes 1600.
So if you wanted to, if we added 1600 to all of these prices, we would get towing in that warranty as well.
Correct.
which is two trips to somewhere, so.
Yeah.
Anybody want to make a motion?
Well, I think, you know, I would move that we buy a 10-wheeler from Clark with the hiking body. I'm not totally convinced. I'm not totally convinced. I'm buying two trucks in the same year. That's all.
That's,
I know we've talked around it a bit, but
right.
You know, if we're having computer problems, and both these vendors now have computer folks that can come to our shops, you know, hopefully the second, or the middle-aged one has had most of his mechanical problems. He's had brakes and springs, I guess, and the other stuff. So I don't know. It's always a crapshoot.
If you look at your highway capital replacement plan that the Capital Planning Committee put forth in 2016, we should have replaced truck number 2 in 2019, and we should be replacing truck number 1.
3.
Which would be 3.
In 2020, and we won't get either of these trucks before 2020. And, you know, and you're having problems with them both. And it seems foolish to me. It's going to take 8 months or 9 months to get them here. If we don't do something about it, we aren't going to have any. We're going to keep paying these god-awful bills. It just doesn't make any sense. We're having, and when I went over to Sharon, and 2 weeks ago, just to discuss the road situation with Powell Hill, they're having a terrible time with their freight liners as well.
What kind of problems?
Electrical. Well, for the most part.
Yeah, it's been reported all over the state.
They're just having a terrible time. And I asked them at that meeting. I said, so what are you hoping to do after they got done with, they were buying a 550 or 1.5 ton for, is what they decided on. And I said, and they're hoping to get a 5-year life out of that truck. And I said, so can I ask a question just for general purposes? What are you hoping to get out of your big trucks? And they said they were hoping to get 7 years, but they didn't think they were going to make it either. That they were down all the time.
Right. But again, they're computer problems, and the problem is that if we have reliable service that will come and take care of the computer problems, mechanically the trucks would be out of the expendable. So
reliable service, and when you go down in the middle of a 2-foot snowstorm, that might be 2 days before they get there. So now you're down plowing. You've got to have something that's reliable when you need it, not reliable service when they can get there 2 days later. It's certainly better than waiting 3 weeks, but.
I understand. I'm playing devil's advocate. You know, that the problem is from a capital planning state, you know, do we plan? I mean, are we going to shoot for, you know, I mean, if we replace the other truck in another year or so, are we going to get so that we're going to replace all the trucks all at once, or are we going to stagger them? We're getting out of sitting and staggering.
From a financial standpoint, it doesn't matter what you replace one piece of equipment each year, or you replace every single piece of equipment that you've got all at the same time. It costs the same money in the end, as long as you're putting that money away as you go. What it does create is all of your machinery is aged at the same time.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, is that then you have three old trucks rather than staggered. So, but again, it's a crapshoot, because you might have a truck that's 7 years old is perfect, and a 5-year-old one is a lemon.
I mean, the alternative at this point is, what, wait another year, and now we have an 8-year-old truck, and there's still only a year difference between
them. Well, they're going to be 8 years old.
I'm not sure if it makes
yeah.
too much of a difference. But.
Well, I bring it up just so we could discuss it. I don't just hear arguments one way or the other.
I think looking at our repair bill, that we're pushing it too far now. I mean, when you're starting to spend $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year on trucks, that's a sign in itself that you're keeping them too long. And that number doesn't even reflect the hours that our guys are rolling around underneath them trying to get them fixed. I mean, and most of those hours, I'm sure, are on overtime. When they go down at 1 o'clock in the morning, they got to work on them. It's overtime.
Well, the other thing that's the elephant in the room is that we had a $5,000 repair that was totally because of lack of maintenance, period, end of story. No grease, no nothing. And that's a hard, fast fact. And, you know, that's before Jimmy came on note. But, you know, so we can't just say, well, you know, put our hands up. If you don't grease a fitting for 3 years, that's gonna fail. And so that was
one of the ticket dollar items
we have.
But that's just one. But a lot of the others have been like hoses and brakes and all that kind of stuff, which no matter what you do, those are maintenance that you're going to have to do.
I understand.
Does anybody want to make a motion to move this discussion along? Because I really think we need to do something.
I would make the motion to award Clark's with the purchase of the 10-wheeler, one 10-wheeler, and one 6-wheeler.
Standard or automatic? Standard.
I would say standard transmission at this point, knowing that we've got the truck coming up in another year or so. If we want to cover our bases at that point to have an automatic transmission in the garage for potential employees in the future that may not be able to drive a standard, that would cover that as well.
I'll second the motion.
May I ask a question with that motion? Did you include in those net prices the $1,600 on each of those for towing?
I wouldn't,
so those prices would increase by $1,600.
And for clarification on that, that towing, as they call it, also covers if a service truck comes to our garage, and it's in the event, it covers up to $550.
Not for each event.
Each event.
For each event.
Each event.
Which is basically travel time. So.
Right. So, for example, if we had to tow a truck to Clark's and it cost us $1,000, it covers $550 of it. But if they send a service truck down and they're able to fix it here, it also covers that, up to $550 of that.
And for clarification, does your motion include 5-year extended warranties?
Yes.
It's that net price. We're talking that net price
plus
on the last line plus $1,600.
Yeah. Let me go in here.
I just want to make sure that the extended warranty was in the motion, so it's clear that we're asking for it. That's
yep.
Then it's minus. Oh, no, that's not minus.
Is there an ideal spread between truck purchases, or I mean, in your experience, Jimmy, is there like an ideal spreading of purchases, years, like 2 years, 1 year? Is in your experience?
They used to do it. They did it every 3 years for quite a while. Then they went because of the way the trade was, and then as the board changes and there are new ideas came to the board, and then they started doing it every 5 years.
Yeah.
And then they bounced it out to 7 years, and then they realized that the 7 years, it just wasn't cutting it. It was starting to cost money. So the last time I was here, that last truck that they had ordered, I didn't have anything to do with it at that time, and they had gone and ordered it. And that was supposed to have came through at that point in time with a 5-year warranty on it. Mm. haven't said if it's 5 years it was supposed to go. But the problem is, if you got like the trucks, if they're going, you're going to get rid of them every 5 years, you got to start getting rid of them on the fourth year.
You can't wait for the fifth year to start thinking about them.
Yeah.
Right. But
and that's also been part of my problem.
The reason I'm asking is, well, for one, is we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants a little bit, and I realize we're in a bit of a sticky wicket with the truck we have now, but we're kind of making policy right now, and you know, maybe that's okay. But if there's an ideal spread we should be trying to hit, like buying trucks every 3 years, for example, is there a way we can get through this without sticking to a recurring pattern? I think that when the capital plan, I haven't read, and I helped write it, so I should know it. But I'm trying to remember what the spread was when the capital plan was written. I know it was a seven year interval. But in terms of whether it's every 3 years or what, but is there a way to, like, can you lease a truck for a couple of years, for example, and then space it out again? Does that make any sense? You know, something like that.
See, I haven't really looked at that. I mean, there was a while ago, I know they talked about doing some leasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. But anyway, the biggest reason why they didn't at that point in time was because of what these trucks are going through, the quality of them, what it was going to be. By the time that lease came up, there was an astronomical number in there that they could end up having to pay at the end of that lease, and they didn't go through that. But maybe things have changed now.
Usually lease vehicles have to be pretty pristine by the time you turn them in. And
I would think there'd be some, you know, pretty common to lease children, so there's got to be some allowance for that.
I can tell you that Bart's was the only ones I remember more than once to happen. And we'd be down a truck, and if they had one on the trade lot up there that was ready to go, being down a truck,
right,
they would meet us halfway, or the wrecker would pull that one down, drop that one off, and
right.
That was something that we weren't used to when the sewers or whatever, you know, when they were buying them over there.
But right.
For the 60-month, which would be the same as the warranty, the extended warranty in there, towing, $1,200.
So not $1,600, but $1,200.
Yep. The $1,600 is for 84 months.
So just another question on, we're going to buy the 5-year extended warranty. What's the regular warranty?
They highlight it in the packet.
Is it a year or two or
some components are different? Yeah, I mean.
Okay. And it looks like we've got the money, right? That's on with you.
We do have the money. These won't come in for another 8 months.
Right, so the money won't
and
be
the
due.
Contribution, the next contribution will go in as well.
I mean, the only thing I don't, and maybe it's not a big deal at the end of the day, but from a capital planning standpoint, it's just sort of, it's a big hit all at once, and it's always going to be a big hit all at once by doing it, buying two trucks every time at the same time. And maybe that's just how it's going to shake out.
Even your capital plan had one being bought in 2019,
right,
and one in 2020.
That's right.
The fact of the matter is, we haven't bought one in 2019. That's why we've got a problem.
I understand that, and I remember those conversations very clearly, and I remember when we talked about it amongst the Capital Planning Committee that we actually didn't even love the idea of having to buy them consecutively, one right after another. We actually wanted, I recall from the conversations, that we wanted at least a two-year spread between one purchase and the next. But because the trucks had been purchased sort of, I think we found ourselves in an emergency or almost emergency purchase situation before where we had to buy a new truck, and that's why we bought it the year after anyway. And I don't think we wanted to be in that situation. So even, in other words, the capital plan, even though it does lay out those purchases one right after another, I recall very clearly that that wasn't ideal, that we actually did want to space them out more. But you know, we're in the situation we're in, and it's just, we're, again, the only thing I don't like about it is we're going to be stuck in this place every time. Where if we're on the same replacement cycle, we're always going to be buying two trucks.
You may indeed not be. You've got 5-year extended warranty on these things.
Yeah.
If things go well with these trucks,
yeah,
you may be able to spread one or two of them
sure
an extra year.
Right.
The problem is that we intended to spread them out for 7 years, and they're giving us a tremendous cost in maintenance. And so at some point you have to say, this sucker is just no longer worth spending $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year to keep it on the road. We're better off to start off with an extended warranty on a new vehicle and hope that it will perform better than the two Freightliners have. They haven't performed particularly well. I'm disappointed. The number of times that there's a truck down is just far too many. Given the fact that we, especially in the winter, depend on all three of them to work.
One thing on the spreadsheet that is a little bit... So Clark on the six-wheeler is willing to give us 62,777 for trading, right?
Correct.
And I'm curious why we're trading in the same truck.
It's not the same truck.
It's not.
Because what we did was, okay, is the 5777
yeah
is the 2013 Freightliner.
Yeah.
And the truck, the 62777 is the 2014.
Gotcha. Oh, so this is the scenario. Okay, I understand. All right, so...
Which also... I'm going to bring some numbers in anyhow, but that in itself shows you one gain by getting rid of them quicker, is that truck is about 8 months younger, if you will, than the,
right,
than the 13, and it's worth $5,000 more.
Yeah, one thing I would point out, and I don't know that this is a game changer, but I know that we've had a lot of maintenance problems with the trucks we have. But from a trade-in perspective, we're actually pretty close to what we estimated in the capital plan for residuals. So, you know, like on the 2013 truck where it's like 77% of estimate. So even with all the problems we've had, we're really not that far off from what our estimates would be. And even better for the 2014 truck. For example, on a 2014 truck, we estimated the residual to be $77,600 a trade-in, and it's coming in at $62,777. So, I know we've got a lot of problems, but we're not that far off from what our original estimates were. So that's good news. That's not necessarily an argument not to keep either of these any longer. It should be factored, but it should temper the everything we've talked about in terms of the problems, that at least our estimates for what we thought we would get for trading were actually, they're still pretty close. But nonetheless, it's time, right? The capital plan said it's time, right?
That's what it says.
Yep.
I can tell you that you got hanging on to them for another year.
Right, it's going to go south, right?
Mechanic. Lord, do I want can't tell you I won't fix it because I can fix it. But
right.
Nothing any irritating. And it's going to be weighing on those guys' shoulders, too.
Right.
You head up the road, you might make it 10 feet. You
right.
might make a whole trip. You don't know.
Right. No, I hear you.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And the way I've always looked at it is the highway department in the winter months is an emergency service.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. I get it.
There's a motion on the floor to buy the Clark International Standard Transmission at $138,840 plus $1,200, and the six with a Viking body, and the six-wheeler Clark International Standard Transmission, $106,188 plus $1,200 for a towing warranty. Was there a second on that motion? Are you ready to vote on that?
Yep.
All those in favor of purchasing these two trucks, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Purchase the trucks. Are we going to authorize Steve and John to get that order in the works?
Yes, Steve, she's had all the contacts, so he can do that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you guys for putting the time and effort in. I appreciate it.
Jim, do you have anything else in the highway situation that you want to discuss?
Yeah.
If indeed you want to leave.
If you don't mind, I'm going to actually make a video of Saturday.
I know that you have some personal commitments, and that's why I'm asking.
Well, I appreciate that. If you don't mind,
I'll touch base with you in a day or so on that grant. I'll try and get hold of a couple more people tomorrow.
Yeah, Jim, I just, at least on behalf of myself, I'd like to pass on condolences for the passing of your mother-in-law.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Jimmy did say that he might be, if things, there were no storms, he might be taking a little time off, and I told him that that was, I urged him to do that.
Under the personnel policy, he's entitled to that.
Yes, and that I urged him to take what time he needed.
Yep.
And I knew that the board would support me in that decision.
Absolutely.
So, thank you, Jimmy, for
your
time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for coming. I'll touch base with you in a day or so. Teresa Melee is here with our HR assessment. And I thought you were going to call on the phone, but I'm glad to see you in person.
I made the trip.
Well, we'll try and get you out of here early as well.
No problem. Whatever time it takes.
Brought up to
okay. Here, quickly, you have that. That was my bad. I'm sorry. This is the board that you, I know you spoke from the spot. Scott Woodward is in the center. John Peters, Frank Heron, Steve Chamberlain, Cindy. both our assistant that takes notes, and I'm Emily Groove, the chair. And go for it. The stage is yours.
All right. Thank you. I do have some copies. I don't know if I have enough for everyone, but if people would like one, maybe we could
make
more if folks would like them. There. So essentially, I spent time in the office a couple of weeks ago, and I looked at, I guess what you would say, all things related to human resources. This is the list of items when I'm doing an assessment for folks that I typically will go down through. Sometimes clients will have them, sometimes they don't. The point of this is obviously to identify where there might be some gaps or where you can build upon current practices. And then from there, I take some notes. This is actually a spreadsheet. So in addition to my observations and going through the different items that I review, this spreadsheet can actually be turned into kind of a working document so that you can identify who's going to work on what and kind of turn it into a working plan, if you will. When I do an assessment, I go through from the perspective of rating the items high, medium, and low. The purpose of that is to really look at it from a compliance and regulatory perspective, where I think there are some opportunities, as well as listening to some of what folks had to say in terms of priorities that we talked about at the very beginning, which were around job descriptions and performance reviews and making sure that those were going smoothly for you. So those, that's why those are bolded. And as I'm going through this, if you have any questions, comments, please feel free to jump in. So with regard to the high priorities, they are in alphabetical order. It doesn't mean that they have to be worked through in this order. The medium priorities are next, and again, in alphabetical order. And then the low priorities last, and again, they're in alphabetical order. So as we're walking through the document, you'll notice my notes. I did look at your employee handbook. You all probably are aware that it hasn't been updated in a bit, which means that there are some items that are automatically going to be missing that really need to be incorporated. And examples of that are things like the Vermont Earned Sick Leave Law, things like social media policies that would need to be updated. Now, what I want to assure you of, because sometimes as we're looking at items and we're noticing that things that maybe aren't there, it doesn't mean that you're not providing them. So, for example, with Vermont Earned Sick Leave Law, which went into effect a couple of years ago, your the time off that you're granting folks, regardless of what you call it, under the law, you're compliant. What you want to make sure of, though, is that it's very clear that the vacation time, the sick time, the personal time, whatever however that falls out for your employees as benefits, that you're referencing Vermont Earned Sick Leave. So that they understand that, for example, with their sick time, they wouldn't get additional time under the law, that you are complying with the law there, and that there are particular reasons under the law that they would take that time off. Now, in practice, you're likely providing that. I didn't get into looking at specific examples with the employees because that information wouldn't have been available to me, but if you're if someone is asking for time off and they're being granted time off, you're in compliance. So I don't want you to feel worried about that, or anyone to feel worried about that. There are just, and that's pretty typical with handbooks. Handbooks every couple of years should be looked at, and then occasionally things will come up, either on the state or the federal level, that just need to be incorporated. So one of the things you want to be looking at with your handbook is, yes, I think it's time for a refresher. I think that a little bit more of an employee user-friendly format could be helpful. Certainly the Vermont League of Cities and Towns have a template available, and that can be incorporated as well as when you're looking at this. Any questions about the handbook?
I had a question on sure. The sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a while since I looked at the legal requirements, but did you get a sense, you said you didn't look at specific examples, so I think I know what the answer is, but whether we're tracking, tracking whether certain people who, like part-time employees, for example, could, if they work enough hours, become subject to the sick leave policy.
I didn't take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at that, to your point, you really have to kind of peel back the layers of the onion, because you have to look at what designation that employee is, whether they're considered temporary, whether they're a regular part-time or full-time, and it's typically the part-time employees, right, that we'd be looking at. And if they fall under all of those little check boxes and they're working 18 hours a week on average for, I think it's like 20 weeks or greater in the year, then you need to be paying them. You need to be paying a prorated amount for that. Now, I believe, and this is reaching back my memory, when I was talking with Alan, that you do have a tracking mechanism for that. And typically your payroll system, if it's being tracked through your payroll system, then typically your payroll provider will be making sure that that box is being checked. Mm-hmm. But it would definitely be something that as you're going through this, that you'd want to be making sure that it aligns with your handbook as well.
Right.
So it is entirely possible, and I would say that it sounded to me like Ellen really understood the mechanics of this and was making sure that things were in place. Mm-hmm. But it certainly is something I would be double checking just to.
Right. And this is sort of an aside because I'm sure you didn't look at this because it is more in depth, but we have a lot of people who in some cases fulfill more than one role, and sometimes they're elected and sometimes mm-hmm. they're appointed, but they're paid on a part-time basis. And this is something we actually talked to Jill about, that we have a really difficult time figuring out what the status, whether they're employees or something else. And I think that's something that an exercise we still have to figure out. Because we're not really clear exactly on some people's status.
So some of that, the way you can go about that kind of depends. You can figure that out through your job descriptions mm-hmm. as a way of saying this is what the job is, and as a result of that, looking at the positions that people hold, you can end up doing that through the process of going through your employee handbook, because there should be a section in your handbook that talks about employment classifications and that being aligned with the Fair Labor Standard Act, so that you know, yes, our exempt employees are actually exempt and not eligible for overtime, and hourly employees are hourly employees, and then under that, you're full-time, you're part-time, you're temporary, and being a municipality, as you know, you also have those appointed positions and elected positions, and there are instances where they may indeed fall under some of the, for example, the Vermont Earned Sick Leave Law. Mm-hmm. So you're always going to have to be looking at your federal wage and hour laws, Department of Labor, and your state, as well as being a municipality, because there are some unique situations that you all know a lot about, especially with comp time mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, you can go through that exercise as in alignment with your handbook, mm-hmm. As well as with your job descriptions, mm-hmm. and the way that I kind of navigate through it is using something like a job description or your classifications, and making sure that you're looking at it from a business perspective or a town perspective, and then the uniqueness of each position and each person, so that you are checking off the box and you know where everybody fits and you're asking all of those really important questions. Mm-hmm. And that way, once you have it lined out, everyone knows this position is X. Mm-hmm. I do think it's important to think about it from a position perspective and not a person perspective, mm-hmm. even though the two kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. It just makes it easier to keep it clean, and then you can always kind of back it up from what the town needs or what the business needs versus this unique little position that Joe happens right. to have, for example.
Right. Yep.
Good question.
So did you review our employee handbook?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what's your, your overall impression? You said
it needs help.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I mean, that's
really, yes. There, and again, it's not surprising. I think that, you know, it's something that I run into frequently, mm-hmm. that handbooks need refreshing, and sometimes we have them in place for a period of time. Employees are doing fine. Other things are going well. You're doing other, you know, the business that needs to be done, and we kind of forget the handbook and it sits over here on the shelf, but in practice we're doing everything properly. It's just that our handbook is not aligning with our practice, so it's time to update that. There's some terminology that for example, I think you call it a probationary period Technically, that's kind of old language, and so we call it, you know, an orientation period. So there are some things like that that just, they're not going to affect you doing business, but some updates that are needed.
Yeah, we ran into that with our zoning. We have zoning from the 70s that are using terms that
yes.
have morphed or whatever. So, mm-hmm. so I understand that. So I'm not sure if, are we going to have her work on our handbook? Is that, was that one?
That'll be a decision on.
Yeah.
That's part of this process.
Because mm-hmm. I've looked at it a bunch of times. I know there's some things, there's actually was at least a contradictory policy or whatever. I think it was just numbers and things. But having a fresh set of eyes that are familiar with this would be really great. So I guess I'd be an advocate for having you work on that
sure.
at some point.
And the goal is to look at your priorities, and you'll notice I put draft on here. The reason it's a draft is these are my ideas. This is what I, you know, this is what came to me in terms of what I would see as top priorities. However, you may say that, you know what, you have recruitment further down on the list and we need to do some hiring. We really need to move that up to a higher priority. So this is not just me coming to you saying this is what you need to do. It really is open for further discussion because you understand what the needs of the town are and how you want to work through this plan. So it's kind of it's a collaborative effort, not a done deal. So this draft, I would expect, could change based on any feedback that you have either tonight or as you think about it, give the feedback to me, and then what I'll do is update it so that you have a final working document. Your Form I-9s, which are what you use to verify that people are eligible to work and that they are who they say they are, I would recommend supplementing your current practice for completing I-9s and just providing some additional training so that you're making sure that going forward you have a standard practice, whatever that might be. I think that I believe that you do photocopy IDs for folks, which is a perfectly fine practice. We just want to make sure that we capture it so that the standard is, regardless of who completes the I-9, that everyone's doing it in the same way. And then as you're looking at this, you have your, this is what we do when we hire people from this point forward, but you also want to look back to your current files to make sure that those are set up the way that they need to be. So it's as we walk through this, you're going to hear me talk about, okay, a brand new I-9, we want to make sure that those are completed properly and that everyone coming on board, we have that standard practice in place, but also that you're looking at what you currently have for documents and that they are being filed and you don't mail them anywhere, but that you're keeping them so that they're available in case they were ever audited and in a certain system for that. And again, some of this sounds really big. You don't have a lot of employees. There's not a lot to keep track of, but it is something that you would want to be mindful of so that no matter who goes to look at your I-9s, there's a standard practice in place. Job descriptions. Scott did send me the job descriptions, and what I would recommend here is that, yes, you have them, not for all of your positions. I think you should have them for all of your positions. It's the best communication tool and how you can measure performance. It goes hand in hand with performance so that everyone understands what their job responsibilities are. A couple of suggestions is that it would be a consistent format. What I would add is making sure that what you were talking about before, Scott, is, you know, this is what the position is. Here's what the status is. It's either exempt, non-exempt, part-time, full-time. You'll probably have situations where you may need a job description for an appointed or elected official, and so that it's all right, it's right there on the document itself. I would also recommend that you would add the trainings that are required for all of your positions and that you have a sign-off. So some of this is not terribly complicated, if you will. It's just improving upon what you already have in place.
Is training the same as minimum requirements? Or
Your training, what I would be looking at with regard to trainings, and there may be some unique trainings that you have because you're a municipality, but at a very minimum, you're going to want to be looking at your VOSHA trainings. So, and VOSHA, for the state of Vermont, we often think about it from, you know, our folks who are working, you know, your road crew and so forth, but it also applies to your office personnel. So there are certain standard trainings that would apply to the folks who are working here in the office. So typically what I like to see on a job description is that standard format has the trainings for everybody, and then there's a checkbox next to those trainings that apply to the position that is on the job description. Then there's never any question about what trainings you need to offer just overall. That also is going to include things like sexual harassment training, because that is a required training, and that has been stepped up for supervisors. I think it was last year, the state statute now includes sexual harassment trainings for new supervisors. And there has been a standard in place for a number of years that sexual harassment training is provided to all new hires. Now, best practice would be that you're going to be providing these trainings each year, and some of your VOSHA trainings are going to depend on what the regulations say. Some of them will be one and done. Best practice is going to be on a yearly basis. Some of them are going to be required perhaps more than one time a year. Some of them are going to be required if you change something up. And I would imagine, I didn't have access to any training records. I imagine those are kept in the town garage. The supervisor probably has them there. And I didn't get into any of the safety pieces because that really doesn't come under my umbrella. But you'll notice that I did put other, just because sometimes I'm curious and I will, you know, ask questions such as, or bring to the attention, you want to make sure that your safety data sheets that would be in your town garage, you want to make sure you have a process and a system for those and that you're keeping those available. And I did note, though, in the files that folks seem very well aware of their responsibility and obligation under VOSHA for trainings and hazardous materials and safety data sheets and that sort of thing. What I would, spoke with Ellen about and added into my notes is that some of that is going to cross over into other buildings. So you just want to make sure, for example, your emergency lights and exit signs are checked on a monthly basis, and then yearly in your fire extinguishers. So just making sure, and again, I didn't talk with the folks from the garage, so it's entirely possible they are doing these things, but it's a question that I ask regardless of where I am, because sometimes the safety and the HR piece overlap. The labor law posters have been taken care of. You did have labor law posters in place. One of the things that Ellen was doing was supplementing that, because sometimes your labor laws will change mid-year, and instead of having to pay attention to that, because they can change at any time and then you have to go to the site and pull down from DOL either on the state or the federal level that particular poster to make sure that you're in compliance, she has just updated them with a subscription, so that you will always get an updated labor law poster the minute that any law on the state or federal level changes. So it's just really handy to have, and you are already making sure that those are posted at the town garage and up here and so forth. Medical files, again, this is in alphabetical order, but medical files and personnel files kind of go together. I don't know why we call them medical files. We just do, but those are typically more of like your benefit files. So when we're looking at documents that we keep for employees, we're responsible to make sure that personnel documents are kept in one file and any benefit information or any leave of absence or any doctor's notes, that sort of thing, are kept in a separate file in a separate filing drawer. So some of this is just separating and organizing some of your documents, as I said here, relative to your health benefits, retirement benefits, leave of absence, those sorts of things. And then your personnel files, again, I would just recommend reorganizing the files to just make sure there's easier access to them and that it's organized in such a way so that if a supervisor needs to review, for example, the performance part of the file, it's easy enough to have a system in place where they have access only to that part of the file, which is a requirement because we don't want our supervisors having access to a file. And I'm not suggesting that they do now. I imagine what happens now is if a supervisor's needing a part of a performance evaluation to refer back to, that it's removed from the file and they're able to view it. I typically encourage the organization of a personnel file to be in a classification file so that every section has a designated area. It's just an easier way of making sure everything's in its place, and no matter who is responsible for maintaining those files, that you, regardless of whether you're a new person and you're taking the system over, you can easily go to it, open it up, and say, everything is here, because it's all organized in the same format. Mm-hmm. And there are also are likely some documents, and I think I've covered that under the new hire process, that you might want to add to your file. And again, what I'm finding is that you have systems in place, but there's room for improvement, or that you can improve upon the process that you're currently using or the documents that you currently have. A leave process, I skipped performance evaluation. One of the things with performance evaluations that I think could really be beneficial to both supervisors and the employees is maybe updating and refreshing your performance document. It may be helpful to add some definition or some descriptions to the scoring system that you have, and that perhaps some more training and support around how to provide more information or examples to the demonstration of, yes, this person is doing an excellent job, and checking that box off, but also being able to say, and I know this because, or here's an example, or here's the demonstrated performance that I've seen. And that way, it's more than, and this is just an overall example, it's more than Teresa's just doing a really good job, and we're checking that box. It's how do we know she's doing a really good job? And that is something that I do find is not always easy, you know, for folks to demonstrate that. Simply because performance evaluations, I think, they're not everybody's favorite thing to do. And I think providing some more support around that could be helpful. And I'm not suggesting your performance evaluations are not well done. They are done. They're in there. I think that there are opportunities to just provide some more support and information back to employees. Let's see. A leave process. Right now, you don't have any particular forms to use if someone's requesting a leave. There's nothing wrong with that. So, for example, with the Vermont leaves, parental and family leave, they don't give us any forms. At the federal level for the Family Medical and Leave Act, there are prescribed forms and there is a prescribed process that you must go through. The most important thing, again, is if your practice has been, you're following the law and you are providing the leave, you're complying. You're making sure that your employees are cared for and that they are given the leave for which they are eligible. You don't have to have a form. That said, if you're the person that's having to follow the process, it's a lot easier if you do have a form so that you make sure that you're not missing anything and that it's really clear to the employee, this is what you're eligible for, this is what we're granting, It's for X period of time. We're able to verify this because, for example, for a medical leave, as a human resources person, I don't want to be making that decision whether a serious medical condition falls under this requirement, this leave or not. I want a medical doctor making that decision. So having some forms and some process around that could be helpful. I didn't put it up there as a high priority simply because you don't have a lot of people requesting leave and you have other things that I think are more important. And again, if people are asking for leave, they're being granted leave, there's not a problem here, so we don't really need to, you know, create an issue where none exists. The training I did touch on already. I think it's something that you'll just want to make sure is captured in one place and that you incorporate your office personnel into that. And again, it's not unusual for me to find that sometimes we don't have specific trainings for people in the office because we don't think of folks in the office from a safe, you know, being at risk from a safety perspective. But some of those trainings would include things like slips, trips, and falls, lifting, being aware of your surroundings, fire evacuation, those sorts of things. Employee benefit orientation and employee benefit process. They kind of go hand in hand. One of the things that we had talked about is, you know, being a small town, sometimes it's hard to attract and retain talent. And especially Ellen was mentioning, you know, trying to find people who are CDL eligible, they're hard to come by, and there's a great deal of competition. The area that you can definitely enhance is highlighting the great benefits that you have and look at things from a total compensation package. So very often, and I'm pretty sure Ellen and I were comparing notes on this, especially when there is a demand for a position and high competition, very often people will look at the wage only. And sometimes we'll even see people leave a job and say, I'm making, you know, X number of dollars an hour here, but I'm going to go there because they're going to pay me more an hour. And if we don't do a good job highlighting the benefits part of it, they may be earning a couple bucks over here, but actually losing a lot of money in their benefit package. So the more you can take time to really educate employees on what the benefits are, especially when you're bringing them in or when you are doing your interviewing and recruiting, then you have more of a competitive edge. And a lot of folks are not really well-versed in their benefits. We don't often take a lot of time to kind of talk about it in, you know, a dollars and cents perspective and how that kind of plays out. And I've had the experience where when I've shown an employee in dollars and cents what their benefit package really is, it's pretty surprising to them. Because we usually talk about, for example, vacation in terms of, well, you get 2 weeks vacation. We'll take that 2 weeks and turn it into dollars. Or the workers' comp that you're paying, or if you're paying for uniforms, the training that you're providing, all of those things listed out really make a difference. The premiums that you're paying, and very often our employees don't know what the town is paying for their portion. They only know what they have to pay. So that's an opportunity to really build upon what you have. And I think it would help all of you as well, just knowing how these positions break out and financially what your contribution is. And it's good to know that you're taking really good care of your employees in that way. Employee benefit process, that really is taking what is already happening and just kind of putting things together in packets so it's a little bit more streamlined with checklists. And again, I don't see that as a top priority simply because you don't have a high volume of hiring that you're doing. So it's something that over time could be pulled together. New hire orientation, and again, you're not doing a lot of recruiting, So I don't see this as a high priority, but should you get into a position where you are looking at hiring people, then again, pulling together a checklist so that it's streamlined, I would recommend adding some documents and upgrading and branding your documents so that they represent the town. So the same way that you present to the townspeople and you want to make it look professional and pleasing to the eye, I like to see that same kind of look for employee documents. Just because it gives a message to our employees that, you know, we care about you. We want things to look professional and nice and available to you. So some of the documents that I would recommend that you consider adding are things like an application for all employees. Now, an application is not a requirement. There's nothing in the law that says you must have one. But it does make sure that you are comparing apples to apples when people apply. Now, you are using an application for all of the folks who are hired in the garage. And I believe you're using the application through the Vermont League of Cities and Towns for your CDL drivers. So I'm just suggesting that, you know, if you get to the point of hiring other employees, to kind of add them into the mix. Recruitment. You are using a process for recruiting employees. Again, I would look at standardizing that. Yes, you're going to have different interview questions for, depending on the position that you're hiring, but I would want you to capture that in writing so you have a standard practice so that you can demonstrate in writing that all applicants are asked the same questions and that there is a process and a way of comparing folks on paper, if you will, that you're comparing apples to apples, because without that, it makes it really hard to demonstrate that everyone is treated as consistently as possible. And again, I'm not suggesting in any way that you're not treating your candidates as consistently as possible. From the conversations that I've, you know, had with Scott and having had an opportunity to speak with you early on, it's very clear to me that you care a lot about the town and that you want to make sure that everything is going smoothly. So I'm not seeing any red flags or anything that should make people feel worried or uncomfortable. Again, it's just taking what you're already doing in practice and capturing some of it and documenting it. Time and attendance was not something that I was able to review per se. I did have a conversation with Ellen, who gathers all of the information. From what I am hearing from her, payroll is being processed. There's no problem with that. There may be some opportunities to improve by updating, you know, if there's a timesheet or a request for time off, there may be something that could be improved upon in that process. So I already mentioned the other category with the just making sure that whatever you're doing in one of your buildings, that you're carrying that over to any other buildings. The only other question that I did have, I understand that the employees in the town library are not town employees, but Ellen takes care of the paperwork for them and kind of onboarding them. Is there an agreement that designates that? And I'm just asking because I'm curious. I don't know that you necessarily need one. I was just curious about that because being on a nonprofit board myself, we have an agreement of understanding, and I didn't know if you had anything like that.
No, we don't.
Okay.
Well, I think there's an understanding that the payroll and the disbursements are going through Ellen in that regard, but so there's a verbal understanding.
Right.
The payroll is going through the town office, and but the library is on a separate warrant article,
mm-hmm.
and the money that they get from the town is at the will of the voters, and so we have an understanding that that's how it's being done. but there's nothing in writing that that is occurring or not. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily know that you need that. I just bumped into it in another volunteer role that I have, and it's what I was wondering about. And it's something you might want to ask about, because from a human resources perspective, you may need something in writing that says, we are not responsible, they are not our employees, but this is the role, these are the services that we're providing to you. So again, you may not need that at all, being a municipality. I just wasn't sure.
Right.
So I've been kind of scooting through all of this, and I know you have other things that you need to get to. Do you have any questions? Is there anything out that jumps out at you here that, you know, you feel like, I really would like it to be rearranged? I'm happy to, you know, kind of leave this with you and let you digest a little bit more and get back to me.
I think that's probably
what we should do.
But if anyone has any questions specific to what Teresa has said, I think that now would be an ideal opportunity to ask them. But I do think that we'll have to discuss it as a board, and I think we have some needs, and we'll be getting back to you. And I appreciate the fact that you made the effort to go through all of our things and done such a thorough job to look us over, because certainly it isn't my expertise.
It's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions?
Nice meeting you, too.
Thanks for coming.
You're welcome. No problem. Okay.
We really appreciate your time. Thank
you. Not a problem. Thank you. Nice meeting you in person, too.
All right, next on the agenda is Alan Graham. And I hope you won't consider me rude, Alan, but I've got to take a short walk.
Nope.
Because I just had my knee done, and I'm supposed to walk every
hour. I'm hoping just to do a short talk. So
I'm only going to go to the end of
on
the
behalf
day.
Of the Pompey Historical Society.
But keep talking, and I will listen.
I wanted to ask permission to run an Ethernet wire in the telecommunications conduit that goes in the building, run from here over to the red brick building, and for us to use it on our one computer over there. And we would pay for the cable and the cost of doing that.
So is it just going to go through the ground? Or
there's a conduit.
Oh, there's already a conduit laid.
Two conduits, one for electricity, one for telecommunications.
Yeah, that would be pretty helpful.
That was the reason we put it.
Well, I know, but I thought it would be appropriate to ask permission.
Are you going to work off of their internet?
Yes, using the public wire.
Okay, great.
Is that okay with the select board?
Yeah, I don't see any problem.
Just a verbal, it's okay.
And without spending any time money, right?
Nope.
We've already spent the money with the second thing in, and so that was put in with the electrician when you did the job to get the thing on, and that was the game plan. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a good idea, but. If the board feels we need to do a formal thing, somebody makes a motion, please. We'll go that route. I think you're good to go.
Thanks.
Thanks,
I hope that was short enough.
Thanks.
Thanks for being patient. So, we've got Alan Graham, the Pylon Road Culvert proposal we discussed with Jim. What I would like to do before working on the budgets, because Phil Decker has come regarding the easement, and I spoke with him, maybe we can do item so that he doesn't have to wait through the budget unless he feels that he really wants it.
It's been fascinating.
I'm sure it's
what I've been missing for the last 3 years.
we want to be sure that you still enjoy your missing, if that's what you like to do.
Well, it's better than watching TV this week.
Better than watching TV anyway. I did speak with Phil on Monday, and I think he has something maybe to report to us regarding the easement on the repeater, and that has bearing on your license and all that. So, go for it. You can speak from anywhere. We don't care.
I don't have a whole lot to report, but in the process of trying to figure out what was going on, I realize that there's a lot of stuff that I don't, that I'm going to have to go dig up people and find out. I don't know whether stuff happened after I left, but essentially it was for the repeater that's there, it was a case of getting electricity up there, which I think has been done, and getting some permanency to it, getting easements from the primarily from the
Webster
family. Sorry, there, it's sort of interesting. There's a lower section which comes from a pole that has power on it. At least that's the way it's drawn. I don't know if we were able to shortcut that. That comes across to a pole that has, I don't know what it has on it, but that is a place where you can. It's got obviously some sort of a box, but you could hook a generator up to that and put power up on the hill if you needed it on a long-term basis. At least that was the plan. I never expected to see what was actually installed.
That's how it was hooked up.
What?
That's how it was hooked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's two proposed deeds or licenses. One was written by Peter DeMuro, which is for the lower section. And I don't know how relevant that is because there's been some land transactions, so that's something I need to check on. And then there's another one that was written by Susan Ford, I believe, for the Websters, which deals from where the line goes across Bartlett Brook Road up on the hill. And I think that, just on a quick read, whatever, that looks fine. But I don't think anything was ever, I can't tell that anything was ever executed on any of that stuff. And I don't know who's, has anybody been working on it? Are you familiar? No?
No.
It's just there. Okay. So I think what has to happen is we have to, somebody, I can work on it some, is find out exactly where, what's going on in terms of the documents and what needs to be done. And as far as the somebody else is already, you're working on the other repeater for the second installation, so that should be so fairly straightforward on that because you have the power up there. And then the licensing. I did, well, repeater's probably different. I licensed five frequencies for the ski club. And the supplier who we buy the radio stuff from actually did all the licenses for it. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And I have not gotten a hold, I wanted to get a hold of Sarah Webster, who I think was the most recent contact, and find out what I don't know from her. And I don't know, I haven't talked to Kevin. Mark Moore was involved, but he probably hasn't been involved recently. And Art was involved in, to some degree, as part of the process. And that's where I stand.
Is that Art Lewin?
Yes.
So basically, you're still working on, you're still trying to work on the easement.
Yeah, well,
On the front side, where the wire already is underground. And
well, the wires are all there.
The wires are all underground, but you're trying to get a legal document to say we can maintain those if we have to.
Yeah, I think the idea was that we were going to get some sort of easement, and it wasn't going to be a long-term one, but it was going to have enough warning, so if all of a sudden the Webster property sold and they whoever bought it wanted to take it away or whatever, that we'd have enough time to try to figure out a solution. I believe that their intention is to hold that land, at least it was, and because I think that Fred's still up there somewhere, and so I'm not sure that it's an issue other than the fact that it's loose ends that should be covered. And I have a lot, I probably had a lot more information, but I don't think I can access my town files. I think I think the email's gone, but I don't know.
How long are those files kept? Does anyone know?
We don't have any policy or anything. I don't even know where they are. Archiving back then was slim to none.
You could ask Becky. She would.
Yeah, well,
she might be able.
She implied that something had happened on the email, so that's a problem.
So
but, I had some stuff in my Dropbox file, so I was able to pull up some of the stuff. But I don't.
But either way, you're still working on it, and we're hopeful.
I will continue to work on it, knowing that you have a deadline on getting the license.
Ellen just left this in my box. This is a construction coverage deadline reminder notice, and Frank, I think you filled out those original forms, and this is about this very thing. And so we can file an extension or whatever. And so I'm going to send this paperwork over to you, and maybe you have some clue, because at least you filled out the original. You and John did that back in March. Maybe you all can figure that out. But so the license is going to expire if we don't do something, but maybe we can file an extension.
Well, the question,
maybe we can get something done.
The question is whether you can go ahead and get the license without having the deed work done.
Yeah, they don't care about it.
Well, I don't think they care, so
no,
I think we're okay in that.
So I think that's probably the best. And then the question is whether you want me to keep trying to work on this or whether somebody else wants to take it over.
Well, we already have a license to do it. So
I would,
you have one for the existing repeater. But are you applying for the...
We already have a license from the FCC to put up another repeater.
Okay. So there's no issue.
No, it was delayed at the select board level by some members because they didn't feel that we should spend any money up there until we had an easement.
Well, the easement you were going to get anyway was not forever. I think we were talking 5 years.
My opinion is just do it.
Okay.
And we're not changing the footprint of anything or the height of the tower. It's going to be a new antenna, but there's still going to be a single antenna up there.
I still think it would be desirable if Bill could get at least an easement with if they want to kick us off, a time frame that they can't kick us off immediately would be
desirable. Well, I think we should still try to get an easement.
But that is something the whole board has got to agree to. I would love to see you continue. Is the board? Is there consensus on the board that we would like to try and get an easement on the front side where those wires are buried?
Oh, I think we should try and get an easement. I just don't.